it's working out which photographs you actually really liked along that way.
Yeah.
And finding that, yes, you do have a style, or a style is slowly developing, but then don't ever worry about having a style, because styles just happen.
It's who you are.
You don't make it. Yeah. It comes from doing.
Yeah.
Hello everyone, and welcome to Canon Conversations, the show where I sit down with some of the top creatives in the industry so that you can become a better photographer. On today's show, we are diving into everything you need to know on landscape photography, and specifically how you can be more creative with your landscape photography. And to guide us on our journey today, we have two legends in the game, Mike Langford and Jackie Rankin. Guys, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure.
Yeah, great to be here. Thanks, Ben.
Fantastic. Now, for anyone who isn't familiar with your work and your workshops, would you mind giving us a little bit of a background on your history with photography and with teaching?
Who goes first?
Well, you're younger, so I guess you go first.
Okay. All right. Well, we've both been photographers for about the same amount of time, but I started when I was 16 photographing greyhounds. Going past the post, 22 races in a day, trying to get that dog on the post, and then progress to horses and people and weddings and photojournalism, all sorts of all manner of things in Australia. I lived in Goulburn, country New South Wales.
And teaching TAFE.
Oh, yeah. So, okay. I was being quite brief, wasn't I? Putting it down to about 5 seconds. a lifetime of photography.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I learned a lot of skills in those early years, all sorts of ways of photographing things that are moving, which I still love to do now, and capturing them in that way. But in 2002, I won Australian Professional Photographer of the Year with a series of images made upside down in an old biplane with my dad. Aerial Abstracts, I called it. And that was the first book that I've made that Mike influenced me with. And I guess, we might talk a bit about books today. Then from that association with Canon, things kept rolling along. But through that work, I was actually exhibiting now and not doing so many weddings. And that allowed me to express myself in a different way. And, where do I go from there, Mike? You asked me to talk about TAFE, I guess. I started teaching. Yes, I was teaching, and that it freed up that economic part of me as well and allowed me a bit more expressive. So teaching at TAFE, then I guess that led on to us teaching here in New Zealand eventually. Mm. That's in a nutshell. We might expand on some of those things a little bit later, but
yeah.
What about you?
Yeah, within that, Jackie started exhibiting, which brought up the fine art part of her profile. Jackie tends to be more fine art orientated these days than myself. I'm more commercial. And I started wanting to be a photographer at the age of 28, which is fairly late in life. But once you sort of realize that you have a passion for something, it's a full-on pursuit. And so the question I had at that stage was, how do you become a professional photographer? And the options were quite limited. It was either taking an apprenticeship with a professional who's already operating, doing an apprenticeship with a press, one of the papers, or going to design school, which is what I ended up doing in Wellington. And at that stage, which was 1980, they only took 16 people a year into the only program on photography in the country at that stage. So it's quite limited. And at the end of that, it was a one-year course. And at the end of it, I sort of realized that I actually knew nothing about photography. And so I went to the head of the department and said, look, you've taught me I know nothing. Can I do a postgraduate in this? And he said, we don't have one. So I wrote one.
Hmm.
And at the end of that, I ended up graduating with enough knowledge to actually start a business in photography. And that's commercial. So I started shooting for the Tourist Hotel Corporation, Mount Cook line. Essentially, after my postgraduate, I had all my clients lined up and I've worked for them for the rest of my life. So that was the start for me. Got pretty lucky. And I was also fortunate enough to be involved in the Day in the Life in New Zealand. And that introduced me to a publisher called Malcolm McGregor, who's since passed away. But he was based in Sydney. So when I moved to Sydney in 1984, I phoned him up and I said, hey, look, Malcolm, it's Mike here from New Zealand. I'm going to China. Would you be interested in looking at my photographs from China? And he sort of fell for it and said, okay, here's some money up front. You go to China and do some photographs from China. And it ended up being a book that I did with another photographer called Jeff Mason. And that started my international publishing career that ended up being books on North and South Korea, still the only photographic book on that subject, The Four Seasons of Japan, and 26 books later, here's Jackie and I publishing our own books and having a really good time of it. So that's me.
Yeah, yeah. So we got together in about 2004, moved to New Zealand.
Oh, actually,
we got together in
2002. We got together. As soon as Jackie won Australian Professional Photographer of the Year, I went, gee, she's pretty good.
I need to hone in on that, yeah. No, fantastic. So you both have a really broad and varied, I guess, photographic career now, and both with quite different sort of avenues of approaching photography. You know, Mike with your more commercial side and Jackie with your more sort of fine art lens. How do you think those varied sort of backgrounds and how they've combined together with you as a couple have affected your aesthetics both together and then separately as individual photographers?
Well, yeah, we often say Mike has helped me to be a bit more disciplined in my work.
And Jackie's helped me to be a bit more abstract in my work.
Yeah, and as far as our clients go, they love it because they get to be in a destination at a location and be able to glean off both ways of seeing and find their own little bent that's particularly them.
Yeah, yeah. Normally a client will actually pick up my structured ones and then say, well, love these abstract ones of Jackie's, and we'll have both things. So that works out really well.
Yeah, because really you have to create the discipline of doing it, you know, getting it right without having to, delve into just moving the camera and not really having that much control. It's control and a good foundation in photography that really, really counts.
So causations are basically what drives me. I need to know who, what, where, why, and put all those factors together and make it work. And Jackie's then got the freedom to actually become the creative eye on the scene and bring her elements to it, which is just wonderful. We've done a series of books, series of exhibitions actually called Symbiosis, and it came out of a realization that we would both go somewhere and photograph in the landscape, and we'd come home, we'd look at each other's photographs, and I'd say, where the hell were you, Jackie? Because she had seen it in a way that I'd never even thought about it. So that became an exhibition where we'd hang our photographs of the same place at the same time together, and it became really interesting. So we've done a few of those.
It also created a challenge, I think, for me. And we would stop at a destination and I would see Mike going a certain direction and I would either go, well, that's the shot over there because he's already pre-visualized it and know what he's doing. Or I would just have to sort of come back into myself and go, okay, well, where are my footprints going to go? And I find things on the way where Mike's already sort of got his idea down pat. But then I don't want to come, I know Mike's style a little bit. Maybe a bit big, I don't know. And I would try and bring myself to it in a different way, deliberately. And that made me push myself even further and try skills and try techniques that hadn't been used before. As cameras got better and they allowed for multiple exposure and camera gadgets got better, we got neutral density filters.
ND10s
and all that kind of stuff, all those innovative things, I just grabbed hold of and, you know, took them on board and tried to see what I could do with them.
Yeah, and Jackie took me kicking and screaming with her.
Mike, you loved it. Yeah.
In terms of influences, are you guys sort of, I guess, just working off your sort of contrasting styles as sort of like influencing off each other, or are you looking quite consciously out to other sort of either photographers or fine artists or other areas in the arts or, you know, beyond that to gain influence for your work?
Yeah, Mike would always say, you're only as good as all the influences you've ever had, and so you need to reach out and obviously take it in.
Yeah, but knowledge. We expose ourselves to as many different styles and ideas as we can, just so we can keep growing, both within ourselves and together, and also outside of ourselves, because we teach. So we need to do that as well.
Yeah, we need to upskill, and even in areas that we don't maybe particularly enjoy the most.
Correct.
Yeah. And I guess that's a great segue into teaching itself. What about teaching appeal to you guys in terms of a way to either support or just, you know, a way to incorporate that into your photographic careers?
It's kind of natural, really. I think we're both very patient people, and we care about others. We want them to get better at their doing. We're able to step outside of just trying to get my shot and look to make sure other students and people are getting in the G of it. And we have enough time on our own as well to express ourselves and push our own boundaries. Would you say that?
Yeah. The groups we teach are small. So most of the time it's one tutor to three students, which is a pretty good ratio. And and it gives us time, any location, we're there for quite a long time. So if people have got questions they can ask us, we normally check up, just see what they're doing. Most people like their own creativity, and really our role is to just guide them as opposed to teach them. So I'd see myself more as a photographic guide than a teacher.
Yeah, a lot of that learning comes back when we get back to the hotel and we've downloaded images, and we look at their photographs as well and give them those critiques. Helpful critiques, you know.
Constructive critiques.
yeah. And they get to see what we've been doing and get inspired by it and try something similar. But they will often see images that other people have put up for a review, and they will think, well, I've got something similar to that, but I didn't think it was okay. And maybe it is all right. So yeah. It's getting over the fear factor.
The other thing that's really important is when you've been photographing for 40 years, which is what we've been doing each, you gain a lot of knowledge. And most of the knowledge comes from having made a huge number of mistakes. Now, knowledge isn't something that we own. It's something that we sort of put out there into the ethos, and people either pick it up or they don't, but it's their choice. But our choice is to offer it. And I think that's what we do most.
Yeah, people enjoy the banter that happens between us. It's not like, you know, there are a lot of photographic couples, even men couples out there who take workshops, and I think that's all part of the flavour.
We're not necessarily good cop, bad cop. We're sort of just different points of view, that's all. Yeah.
There's a certain amount of love that goes in there too. Yeah. It's all good.
Yeah.
I love it. I guess sort of transitioning now to sort of going into maybe some of your teaching styles and sort of focusing on the fundamentals of, say, landscape photography. What are some of the things you like to teach people who are sort of starting out their photographic journey? What's some of the sort of fundamentals you like to teach?
Basically understanding the basic principles of photography, which is, you know, people tend to rush off and sort of do what's latest or what's greatest without understanding how to get there. So we're always going back to the basics, and I think that's a really important thing to do.
Yeah.
You know, that why choose that aperture? Why choose that shutter speed? Why that ISO? Why that lens? Why stand where you're standing? You know, are you telling people how high your tripod is, or, you know, what are you trying to say? So we always go back to the basics.
Yes. Yeah, good. And we have tutorials that go through that, and it's interesting. We think, oh, should we put this up? Maybe these guys are a bit more advanced, but they will always get some sort of jewel out of it. They things that they forgot, because they've scooted through those fundamentals through YouTube videos and being out with camera clubs or just on their own, and they think they know it, but often they go, oh, I forgot about that. I forgot about how a lens communicates in different ways. You know, is it about what you can see from where you are, something small, or is it about that big environment that's more of an environmental?
Yeah, where you're standing.
Standing, yeah. Mm-hmm. Here I am, and then that's in the mid-ground and background and filling it all in. We don't probably chase the classic shots as much because, you know, there's certain places. Oh, well, we do it actually in one.
Well,
in
we do.
Wanaka tree, let's have that as an example.
Well, that's the hardest one, especially since they've started cutting limbs off. That's made it really difficult.
Okay. So we'll still go. We'll go to this this famous tree in Wanaka as a way of warming people up for the workshop, about looking for separation, about looking for the right shutter speed, the right height, looking at the light, understanding the light.
Yeah.
So there's a plethora of techniques that come through in any shoot, isn't there?
Yeah, we call it doing your scales. And you need to do your scales to get your creative juices going. And it's like there's a lot of people doing in-camera movement at the moment. And the question that is always good to ask is, do you know the recipe that gives that specific result? Because if you don't, then you can't repeat it. So repeatability of an idea is a very important thing to grow from. Mm-hmm. So something that's just randomly found and you can't repeat it means you actually haven't really resolved that shot yet.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So I guess we turn up at a pretty place. We try and make the best chocolate box possible.
Yeah. Chocolate boxes up, are really difficult.
Really difficult. And then, you know, then move on and explore those other creative techniques. Yeah. Mm. Get that shot in.
Is there a particular, like, sort of, I guess, skill or craft or idea that you find people often struggle to wrap their head around when they're starting out? Is there any of those sort of, like, those scales, like you mentioned, that are hard to really stick in people's head?
Yeah, and we actually try and give people that grounding so that they understand the principle before they actually go out and apply it. So as a precursor to most of our workshops, we actually do the basic stuff time and time and time again. And every time we do it, we actually are reminding ourselves about all that stuff as well.
Yeah, often we'll walk around and we'll go, what's your subject?
Yeah.
How big is the subject in the frame? Is the subject compromised by anything in the background? Is there good light on the subject? Is the better light going to happen in 5 minutes' time? Look over your shoulder and check it out.
Yeah, and we've slowed down a bit too. When I was starting photography, I used to miss so many shots because I thought it was somewhere else. I used to run around like a chicken with its head cut off, and now I'm much, much happier to sit and see what resolves from being there. Because you've just got to sit and wait sometimes and have an idea. And if that idea doesn't present itself, then adapt to what is there. And that takes a bit of meditation, a bit of slowing down.
Mm. Yeah.
And you mentioned it just before, but one of my other questions was basically, has the craft of teaching photography made you rethink your own craft? And you just mentioned that it did there before. What, like, for teaching for so long, like, how's that sort of starting to affect your craft? Do you feel like you are sort of like relearning and understanding those fundamentals in a different way as you sort of teach them over and over again?
I guess we're seeing another way of, it's part of our income, of course, teaching and making books. So I will tend to turn up at a situation, and if I've made a mistake at the beginning, I don't delete that later on. I keep it because being able to see the difference between something that was incorrect and then seeing it correct is a better way of teaching and showing people. Just giving them an idea that this is the best shot is not as good as showing those before and after shots, and that's what our books have.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So whether that gets in the way of some of the creative flow along the way, perhaps it did earlier on, but I don't think it does so much now. You mature into it. We've been teaching here in New Zealand for 15 years, about that, 16 years?
16 years, yeah.
And so, you know, we're stuck with it, and that's a good probably a good barometer that, that we're doing it okay, and our lifestyle's fine, and we're still shooting and making photographs that are being celebrated. Just the recent awards, we've done quite well.
You have.
I had my first 98. That was pretty cool.
It's behind Jackie.
This one here. And we still, now that's part of it too. We still print, which is great. Mm. Yeah, we print our work. We hang it around the house. We swap prints in and out of the frames, so we get to keep them fresh. And that's always the challenge too, you know, for each other, just to find another print to put up on the wall and keep it going.
Yeah.
It's never ending, really.
Well, that's the same with clients. We've got clients now that have done 6 workshops with us. And it's not because they've failed each workshop. It's because they keep wanting to grow and become better with each workshop. And that's how we felt about it as well. You take them to a certain point and then you allow them to grow from that point by supporting them, believing in them.
Yeah, well, I guess that's a great place to transition now into sort of like once people have the fundamentals and the basics under their belt, where do you take them from there? What's the next sort of step in the learning process that you see?
Well, our part of it is the print, because, you know, we do print work, and we also make books from our workshops, and their images become 8 to 10 pages of that book. And that encourages them. They see that that's okay. They will then hopefully make books of their own, particularly of past trips or even an art book of some sort. What do you think, Mike?
The idea of books is that it exists sort of out in front for people. If it's just a digital file, you get to see it all the time, but no one else does. Mm. So making books is making your work more public, and especially if it's a book that's for retail somewhere. Yeah, it means that you're proud of what you're doing, and you're sharing those ideas with other people. I think it's healthy.
Yeah, books also require a certain different aesthetic, that the images need to flow through those 8 pages if they've got those, or if it's their own book, it needs to have, what's the book about? Where's the direction? Where's the opening pages? Mike, you know all about books. Come on.
Well, the whole thing with books is, don't repeat yourself. If you've got a shot that does something, let that one shot do it. Don't put 10 of that shot up, because that just dilutes the power of the idea. Mm. So keeping it simple is very, very important. And also, don't clutter your books. You know, there's so many people you see put photographs on a page, and there's 10 on the page. Whereas, maybe one's enough.
Well, it's what kind of book it is, I guess.
Yeah.
Is it a landscape, an art book? That is usually one, maybe maximum 2 photographs.
Mm.
But there's also that, also brings in that idea of creating series and bodies of work, maybe chapters.
Yeah.
It just keeps going on, you know.
Mm. But the intent's the most important thing. People need to know why you've done what you've done. And when you see a book that's just got photographs in it, it's really difficult to understand the intent of the creator of the book. So always let people know what your idea is, and then give them a passage, a start and a finish and a body and a climax somewhere in it. And, sort of talk to them, communicate with them, because that's what books are. They're visual communications.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it's something that I think people come to, like, eventually and later on in their sort of photographic journeys, like, people start out with trying to make a pretty image, and they're trying to use this tool to capture the world around them. And then only as you start to sort of understand and get familiar with that tool, that you realize you can start to say things with it. And by reading other photographers' books, other artists' books, seeing how they talk about their work, can inspire you to think about your own work and think, what do I want to say? How do I want to say it? How is my photography going to help to communicate that message? And then how am I going to, put that in, potentially into a book and explain that and sort of help people in their process along the way? It's all sort of circular conversation. Yes.
Mm. Yeah, and I think that practicing to write is part of that.
Yeah.
So, many of our clients are on Facebook and Instagram, but writing about the photographs as you put them up, at least a few sentences, is a good place to start instead of just putting up some photos and putting up 50, yeah. It might be best to put up one at a time and take that time out to describe for yourself, you know, and do those practicing things.
Mm. Yeah. I think people need to understand what it is that you're trying to communicate with what you're showing. So many times a photograph is just a photograph. It has no meaning to anyone without some sort of disclosure.
Mm. Mm. Exactly. It's like when you walk into a gallery and you see an image and there's a wall label next to it, you know, it gives you context.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, absolutely. I guess let's transition now to talking a little bit about your books in particular. And you've got two books on creative landscape photography and also some books on travel photography. And while sort of travel is kind of off the cards at the moment, we're going to be looking at all of your books and trying to pick out some learnings from there. So,
you know, you can travel out your back door. You don't have to go far.
That's the thing, is you can actually. And I think a lot of people are going to be exploring, you know, their own backyard and our own country now over the coming months. And it's actually probably a fantastic way to look at those lessons in travel photography and take a less kind of, I guess, exotic approach to it and you know, think about traveling in our own backyard and exploring it with a new lens. So let's talk now about your books. And I want to kind of pick out the word creative and all of that and what you, I guess, consider to be creative landscape photography versus regular, in inverted commas, landscape photography.
Mm. Right. Well, we began as Queenstown Centre for Creative Photography,
mm-hmm.
QCCP, the Russian
Federation.
Mm-hmm. So creative just was in there as a way of going outside the box, I guess, a sense of going outside the normal foundations of photography and pushing those boundaries.
Yeah. Yeah, but with the understanding that you know where you're coming from and where you're going. So it's a path, if you like. Creativity is the ultimate expression of you in the landscape. I mean, let's stay with the landscape because landscapes travel as well.
Mm.
So, you know, when you're looking at a landscape, you're not just looking at what you've seen before. You're looking at how you feel at that time and what you're thinking at that time. And implanting those elements into that landscape is the purpose. It's not just, it's like looking and seeing. When you look at something, you don't really understand it. It's a glance. It's a flash in the pan. When you see something, it's about understanding what it is you want to say about it. So that's a huge transition. So the purpose of the books, can I just sort of go back to that just for a second?
Absolutely, absolutely. Please,
the purpose of the books was at the end of a course, people would say, you know, after 4 days, 4 or 5 days of talking about photography, they say, have you got that in writing somewhere? And because, you know, you learn and then you forget. And so the idea of the book is that constant reminder. And a lot of people actually, we've titled them field guides.
Mm.
And they're field guides because they're designed to put into your camera bag. And a lot of people have actually bought a second one because the first one totally got munted by being in the camera bag and getting wet and all sorts of things. So it's a very practical, a lot of recipes in there using lots of different techniques.
Yeah, and I just remembered something. You asked me about that word creative again.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people think they're not creative. How do I put on my creative sort of button? How do I do that? And I think that's one of the reasons why we use that word creative, to entice people to learn creativity. And I think you can learn it. I think you can practice it. And it's a matter of sometimes doing those fundamental things, and then just keeping on going and believing in yourself and having others around you that help you and encourage you to do that, instead of perhaps maybe people at home who are not photographers just saying, oh, that looks, I don't understand it, or that looks kind of strange or whatever. Being able to be constructive in that, and coming back to those recipes that Mike was talking about, it is a certain place where you can start. We could start with which one, Mike?
I was just going to say, do you have any favorite takeaways or recipes from the book that you guys are sort of most enjoy sharing?
Yeah, well, most of the photographs in the book aren't necessarily our favourite photographs. They're just the ones that illustrate concepts best. So our books aren't about great photographs. They're about interesting ideas.
Yeah.
And enjoying yourself out in the field.
Yeah.
What can you do at different places where there's hundreds and hundreds of people, or at the beach, you know, I'm thinking about Australia and New Zealand now. How can you get rid of people and make them all blurs? You know, that's where that 10-stop filter will slow the shutter speed down. So I guess I think it's being able to make photographs that your eye can't see. I find that really interesting. We can't see in multiple exposures, and I really enjoy that technique. But it does. There's a lot of failures that come along with that at the same time.
Yeah.
And then it's knowing when you get a good one, but also practicing a technique that does work over and over again, and allowing for serendipity to come into your life, that something happens unexpectedly, a light turns on or something like that, that made it really special that you didn't pre-visualize, and then being able to look at the final finish, or the image that comes out of the camera, and knowing that that's the shot that worked in amongst 10 that perhaps didn't work.
Well, let's take Jackie just won a higher scoring print on the recent NZIPP awards. That was actually the category she won was sponsored by Canon, which is a wonderful thing. Thank you, Canon.
Yeah.
The image that we're talking about is the one behind Jackie up here.
Yeah, we'll probably bring it up on your screen later.
Yeah.
We'll send you that file.
We'll send
so
you
that
file.
So people can see it closer. And it was, you know, five images taken consecutively over the top of one another, moving the camera a little bit, changing the exposures between each one so one would dominate. And the serendipity part of that was that on one frame, there was a billboard that lit up, and it became a little dominant element that sat on top and changed the aesthetic, and also created a bit of a riddle of how come there's just one of that frame and everything else is muddly and quite abstract. And Mike's got another idea here.
And it's all in camera. It's about, as Jackie said, you can't see multiple exposures, but you can think them. And it's a matter of taking that thought, that idea, and then transposing it into an image. I've got one here in this book, which is it's just two exposures. And it's something that I hadn't seen before. It's in camera. And what I ended up doing was changing the white balance.
Nice.
So one of them's got a white balance, which is...
like a 56, and then you've got tungsten. A 32, yeah.
Well, it's actually it's a 32 and then a 1,000 Kelvin. 10,000 Kelvin.
I just got to read the recipe.
Yeah, so there's a recipe.
Read the recipe.
But it came out of trying to communicate a visual depth to a photograph. And instead of just having a multiple exposure that gives you a close and then a wider one, a context of space. It also gives you a context of visual depth, which we know cold colours, that they recede, warm colours advance. And when you put those together in a frame, you've got this visual depth, which is really quite exciting. So those are the sorts of things that we like doing.
See, that's Mike challenging himself to try and do something that hadn't been done before. I hadn't thought of that. I often do my work in black and white.
Yeah.
But we'll shoot a RAW and a JPEG at the same time.
Yeah.
You know, I do that often, and because I often love what comes out of the camera. A black and white JPEG can often look great to me, because I want whites blown out, you know, and I want some of those blacks, and it's a bit grungy, and it's not as hasn't got all the tonal range, and then I take it even further.
And that's the other thing with the Canon, is that you can choose to keep every file frame, and so that when you get back to your computer, if you want to change your mind about things, you can.
Yeah, and I want to pick out some things that you've just mentioned there, because it's an area of photography that I'm really interested in. You mentioned some things like your sort of blurred elements, like multiple exposure blur elements. You've mentioned the sort of different white balances, and then you've mentioned blown out highlights. And all of these things are basically like, could be considered like bad parts of a photo. Blurriness, blown out highlights, incorrect white balance. Can you guys talk a little bit to, I guess, when you throw out the rule book, when you ignore those rules, and how do you do that creatively, and when sort of something is objectively wrong, how that can be right?
Yeah, that's great. I love what you've just said. That's fantastic.
It can. That's it. You just said you throw out the rule book at some stage. And I guess you do it with other people around you that will give you some feedback on that. That helps. But also being able to see that other people have thrown out the rule book is all right too. Still knowing that the aesthetics of that some images can look quite garish, and that you're choosing that. Not every image needs to be pretty. They can be somber and blue. Even that blue one, Mike.
Here's a
very blue monkey.
A very blue monkey. And the idea was to say the word cold. So if it's the snow monkey, it shouldn't look warm, because it's actually saying the wrong thing. So it's a matter of saying, you know, when we talk about color, we're talking about an emotional element of the camera. So color is the emotional context. In black and white, that's totally different, but it doesn't have the emotional context. So what I try and do with color is either say warm and happy, or cold and prickly, or dangerous if I go into the red realms. So you sort of read color and think about, does it support or detract from what I want to say?
Yeah, and we'll often ask people to describe what they're seeing and how they're feeling at the time of shooting, and that helps them get an idea, is it cold? And do you want to make it feel cold, and make it cold at the time?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So descriptive words are a really good way of saying, some kind of mood. Is it ethereal? Does it make you feel light? And is this the kind of feeling you want? That's where you go to those high keys and deliberately blow them out. You can't doing it later in the computer has quite a different look. So it would be to do a different look. And it would be a bracketing would be the good thing to do, where you do maybe a darker shot and then progressively go beyond and break those boundaries and so-called.
Yeah, you've just pressed another little button. And the other button is you can do anything you like in your computer, but you're in a totally different environment. And most times when you're in front of your computer, you have a mindset that you would increase a bit of saturation, a bit of contrast, you'd do this, you'd do that. And you have a palette that you do to just about everything that you create. When you're in the field, the question always is, how can I actually make it feel like what I'm feeling like now? And so the JPEG out of the camera is hugely about, it's almost like, it's a little thumbnail of the moment, which is quite different from post-production on the computer. So we teach the moment a lot more than we do post-production.
Yeah, just a little tip. If you do this when you're using Lightroom, you have to make sure you go to the preference pane and tick import the RAW and the JPEG together. Otherwise, people come back and they go, I did all this really hard work and all I can see is the RAW file that comes up looking pretty drab.
Yes.
Let me press the auto button that's going to fix it up and make it into a chocolate box I'm used to. So the JPEG alongside, you go, wow, that's what I was looking and feeling like. Let me try and express this in a different way, not just go back. Because computers and programs have auto settings too, don't they?
Yeah.
Absolutely. And it's not to say that post-processing is bad, but you need to understand what you're doing. And going as far down the road as you can on site in camera lets you understand that post-processing, part of the workflow a bit more, so you aren't just simply like, how do I make this not look, unsaturated, bump the saturation up, and you just do the same thing over and over again. Absolutely. I guess I as we sort of round out the show now, I wanted to sort of speak to a couple of things you just mentioned around basically like the feeling of a photo and like what it says, and because I think a lot of people might look at especially a landscape photo and say it's just a record of the what I'm looking at. It's just that's just the landscape. Can landscape photos or photos in general how do they say something more, and can they say something compared to just being a record of the physical world?
Well, I do that a lot. I make my landscapes into something quite different by throwing teapots into them or saucepans and holding up forks.
Flowers.
And, through the air. And when I'm doing that, I was always looking for separation and the right shutter speed and those kind of things. Has that gone a bit too wild for you? So landscape photographs is about turning up with the right technique for the right subject and using all the practice you've used in the past to apply something and sing that song really well.
I think Jackie's nailed it. An appropriate technique is the thing that you, once you've worked out what you want to say, it's got to be the technique that actually reinforces that. A lot of people use technique for technique's sake, which doesn't end up saying much at all. It's just about the technique. And as judges, we've both been judges for over 30 years, one of the questions always is the technique appropriate to the communication?
Yeah, the next thing I think is it's very hard for a photograph to feel emotive when it's just on your computer. It's so much better when you make a print of it, particularly a matte print, a fine art matte print. And you show that to other people and they go, wow, is this a painting?
Yeah.
Or it so feels so different for them, a general public who have never seen that, you know, fine quality matte prints. And that's another way of making that more emotive.
And do you want to talk about your encaustics behind you? Do you want to grab one and just talk about it?
Okay.
Yeah. You got time for this?
Yeah. Absolutely. We've got all the time in the world.
Right. So this is just a little thing that I've been working on recently. You can see it's wax over the top of prints. I can engrave into them and impress into the wax and put ink and all sorts of multimedia. So that finishing things off in different ways is a really exciting thing for people, and me particularly at the moment. I'm really loving it. It's just one that's there. I've got dozens outside in my studio space.
Fantastic.
Yeah, and for me, this is a new skill, and I'm just taking a step at a time. I'm not trying to do everything all at once. I'm being quite methodical about the learning, because so I'm not applying any colour. It's all just black. Black inks or white inks and grey and a white background, and I'm slowly moving through it because that's a huge area on its own. Encaustic painting, you could even make paintings out of this stuff, but I'm really enjoying that. So that's another skill.
Yeah, I was just going to say you've just answered one of my last questions, which was, are you learning any new techniques still? And you've just answered that there. And you've just illustrated that, you know, photography and art and creativity is just this ongoing process that you can always find something new to learn.
Totally.
Yeah. And also just honing those skills, writing about your work, going back through those libraries of images that you have and being able to put books together. Mike, in the last lockdown, made two lockdown books. One was our view, 10 years of view from our deck in Queenstown when we're living.
So the criteria was that every photograph had to be taken from the lounge deck. And the other one was a book called Manscapes during the lockdown. Of course, we weren't allowed to go very far. So I went through my archive and started to notice that I'd been photographing man's influence on the landscape regularly. You know, it could be power pylons, it could be dams, it could be irrigation things, who knows. And I went, these are manscapes. I'll start doing a series of manscapes. So I put together a book called Manscapes.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Nothing to do with body here. And
I was just going to say, Manscapes has got a potentially different connotation to it, but I like the boldness of word choice there. So my last question to round out the show is basically if you have any sort of, I guess, final advice, any final sort of parting advice for photographers who maybe have sort of found themselves in a bit of a rut with their creativity and their craft, especially relevant with the sort of COVID lockdowns. You know, some creatives flourished, but others found themselves in a bit of a rut. Do you have any advice for creatives who sort of can sort of break the mold and find a new way to sort of see their craft from a different angle?
All right. Well, I'll sort of come back to a few something you said there about being in lockdown and not being able to get out. one way that I connected with some of our clients was to create some online Zoom sessions where the groups would come together, little micro groups of five or six people that can work together and inspire each other. And I know from their feedback that they found that really good. Just having somebody there and a group there to inspire them to pick up the camera every day and practice. And I would give them a challenge, and they would come back with something a little bit different or sort of the same, and they would share it in another micro Facebook page group, and I found that that was really good. So I would say practice, and then being with others. But
and the one thing I'd suggest is look through your archive, re-enthuse yourself through what you've done, and work out where you might have been going that you hadn't assessed, and go there. Do it.
It is. It's working out which photographs you actually really liked along that way. And finding that, yes, you do have a style, or a style is slowly developing, but then don't ever worry about having a style, because styles just happen.
It's who you are.
You don't make it. It comes from doing.
Oh, that's fantastic advice. And that's a great place to finish, really. Just, I guess, looking back inward and looking at what you've done and trying to look at it with a new lens is a really great thing for photographers to hear. Thank you guys both for your time and for sharing your knowledge. I've had a really great time getting to meet you guys and chatting through your work.
Yeah, you too, Ben. Thanks. Great.
Thanks, Ben.
Thanks for the opportunity. Alrighty.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Alrighty, guys. Well, hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll have links to Mike and Jackie's work as well as their books below. And thank you guys again, and we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Bye.